Hey everyone, before we jump into this episode, we just want to say thank you for your support by listening to our podcast. We hope we're accomplishing our mission of promoting dad positivity and supporting all those awesome dads out there. If you think we are, please like, subscribe, and review our podcast on your preferred podcast medium. If there is a dad in your life that you think deserves the spotlight and praise for their example, let us know. We'd love to have them on the show. If you have topics you want us to cover, find us on Facebook and Instagram at Just Some Dads, or email us at justsomedadspodcast@gmail.com. Most importantly, and most helpful for us, is for you to take a brief moment to share this podcast. We like to do it through texts. It's pretty cool because it takes people right to the podcast on their phone. So, share with the dad, share with the mom, share with all of your friends, really. We hope you enjoy this episode. Now get out there and keep doing good. After you listen to the episode, of course.
Hey everybody, Merry Christmas from Just Some Dads. We're really excited to be bringing to you our Christmas holiday episode. And I guess we're just going to get right into it. No guests this week, just Michael and I. And we thought we'd share with you some of our favorite Christmas stories that, with messages of inspiration and hope that will hopefully uplift you and bring you the same feelings of peace that it's brought to us.
Or not, but at least provide a little bit of insight into the human condition. Because I don't know if my story is necessarily the most peaceful, but
there you go.
It's a good story.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
It's a really good story. Why don't you kick it off, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. So the story that I love this story, but it is the Christmas Truce of 1914. And it is a really fantastic story. So it takes place during the first Christmas of World War One. About 5-ish months into the war. Before we go into this, Colin and I know exactly what event we're going to be talking about, but I don't know the history of Colin's story. He doesn't know the history of mine. These are not exactly uncommon stories. But this week we've spent a lot of time and energy researching and looking into these stories to try to get as much of a background as we could to present to you. Maybe hopefully you'll learn some things that you didn't know before. And it can provide you some insight into Christmas's past that could bring a little bit of extra Christmas spirit into your Christmas week. So, here we go. I'm just going to go into my story. 1914, Christmas Eve, in roughly southern Belgium war lines or trench lines. So, for those of you who don't know very much about World War One, I'm pretty sure a lot of our listeners do. But World War One was trench warfare. And a lot of times the trenches and the no man's land in between the trenches was very, very small. Small enough that you could have a semi-normal conversation with the opposing line if you spoke at a slightly above, louder than normal voice pitch, right? And so the lines were that close. And the Christmas Truce of 1914 is unique in the fact that it was not scheduled. It was kind of controversial, if not incredibly controversial, among both lines of combat, and it was not universal in its application. And so there were those who adhered to the truce unofficially, and then there were those in different parts of the fighting and in the war that did not, and the fighting continued. And so it's a fantastic story, and it's really interesting, and it actually kind of starts with the German soldiers offering a truce first. And in popular culture, you'll see or hear stories of, you know, fighting in the trenches and someone singing Silent Night, and they're singing Christmas carols back and forth to each other, which did take place. You hear the occasional story of soccer games played between, you know, enemy groups and enemy forces, which is, you know, partially true as well. But this is, as far as I've been able to find, where it started. The first signs of a Christmas truce happened at about 8:30 p.m. on Christmas Eve. And it started when an officer of the Royal Irish Rifles reported to headquarters that the Germans have illuminated their trenches, are singing songs, and wishing us a happy Christmas. Compliments are being exchanged, but I, meaning this officer, am nevertheless taking all military precautions. Further along the line, two sides, both the German sides and the British sides, were singing carols to each other. The Germans singing Silent Night, and the British soldiers singing the First Noel. There is a diary that exists from this experience from the Scots Guards, the war diary of a private murker of the Scots Guards. He said he met a German patrol and was given a glass of whiskey and some cigars, and a message was sent back saying that if we didn't fire at them, they would not fire at us. And so that is the first recorded experience of the Christmas truce, was at 8:30 p.m. on Christmas Eve between the Royal Irish Rifles and the Scots Guards and some German troops. Another interesting record of a different location of the same truce was from a British soldier, Private Frederick Heath. He died in the war, Private Heath did, and he's buried currently, according to cemetery records, in Israel, interestingly enough. Not sure why that is, but it is, that's where he's buried. But he said in the letter home that all down their line of trenches there came to their ears a unique greeting in war. And that greeting was, English soldier, a Merry Christmas, a Merry Christmas. Then in his letter home, he wrote that other voices added, come out, English soldier, come out here to us. For some little time, we were cautious and did not even answer. Officers, fearing treachery, ordered the men to be silent. But up and down our line, one heard the men answering the Christmas greeting from the enemy. How could we resist wishing each other a Merry Christmas, even though we might be at each other's throats immediately afterwards? So we kept up a running conversation with the Germans, all the while our hands ready on our rifles. Blood and peace, enmity and fraternity, war's most amazing paradox. The night wore on to dawn, a night made easier by songs from the German trenches, the piping of piccolos, and from our broad lines, laughter and Christmas carols. Not a shot was fired. I think that's pretty cool. I mean, we live in a time where many of us and many of our listeners are quite familiar with war. Not necessarily having been in or on the front lines or intimately involved, but for the past 19-ish years, the United States has been, and many other countries and its allies, has been in a war. And it is not uncommon to hear stories of war or of enmity or of hatred, anything of that negative emotion group. And to have these enemies early on in a war of 5 months. I mean, one person, one analyst historian provided the insight of with the 5 months in, 5 months into the war, these soldiers were not new to war anymore. They had been gone long enough from their homes. They'd been fighting in the trenches. They had seen the atrocities of war in such a difficult and bloody and in your face environment as World War I was. The atrocities and horrors of war were not new to them. And so going into this experience, as you know, this Private Heath shares, they were hesitant. They were cautious in their approach. But yeah, I can only imagine, I guess, the paradox, as he says, the paradox of enjoying that sweet spirit of Christmas and putting aside differences for the moment to celebrate something as simple as the birth of Christ. And knowing full well, in less than 24 hours, it's very possible that you or they could be dead because of you or their actions. And I think that'd be tough. I think it'd be really hard. But I think that it goes to show how much can be accomplished when we focus on similarities and not differences. And one thing that's super interesting about this whole story is that there's a huge dichotomy between on the lines and people away from the lines and in control. So there's a couple of stories of headquarters units and higher up officers and people who were removed from the lines hearing these reports and getting these stories back. And being furious, being absolutely livid that there's fraternization going on between, you know, whatever unit and the enemy. It doesn't matter which side, both sides were really upset the further removed they were. And so there were a lot of cables going back and forth saying, you know, stop this immediately, get away from them. Why aren't you killing the enemy? We're in a war here. And there's one story of one captain who tore up the cable saying, why aren't you fighting? You know, why aren't you attacking and killing the enemy? This is kind of what we do. And he just tore it up, threw away the cable. It's just impressive to me that those kind of experiences and that kind of camaraderie existed. And so I think that's really cool. And I'm just going to continue to share some of these awesome stories. There's a full letter, and it's from the same Private Heath. Some historians have dug up, and I don't know if it's recreated necessarily. Resurrected is the word I think they used. His entire letter home talking about this experience. Now, the Christmas Truce of 1914 also has another name, a nickname. It's also frequently referred to as the Plum Pudding Policy. And that's a super interesting story. So the way that that name comes about from the plum pudding policy is actually from a captain in the, what unit was he in?
I'll interject here while you're looking that up.
Sure.
World War One, just like you're saying, it was a pretty grisly war. And if anybody wants a little something to do over the Christmas break, if you have a break, a really great book and great film to illustrate that is All Quiet on the Western Front. That really, really shows how bad it was, which I think makes this story all the sweeter, all the better, more enjoyable, and to see these people who were coming from such different backgrounds and were fighting over some pretty fundamental differences, for them to just put that all aside for Christmas, for this holiday that has been universally celebrated for a long time, is pretty great.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never seen the film. It's been recommended to me a number of times, and I think it's something I probably will do this upcoming week. But yeah, thanks for the recommendation. I found the unit. So, Captain Clifton Inglis Stockwell was part of the Royal French Fusiliers. Now, a fusilier is just a fancy name for a soldier with a fusil, and a fusil was a flintlock rifle. So he was an infantry guy. Anyways, so his story is super cool. And so there were two commanders. It was Captain Stockwell and his counterpart, Baron Maximilian von Sinner, on opposing lines in opposite trenches. And their story is fantastic, and it actually still kind of carries on today, and I'll explain why. Captain Stockwell and Baron Maximilian von Sinner both received orders to continue fighting, because orders were coming down, like I was talking about earlier, to, you know, end this nonsense of fraternization and trucing. And they decided that was dumb. And they hoisted banners saying Merry Christmas to each other on the parapets of the trenches. And they ended up actually getting up out of their trenches, approaching each other. And Captain Stockwell had a box of cigars, which he offered to Baron von Sinner. And Baron von Sinner offered two beers to Captain Stockwell. And together, in no man's land, they toasted to each other's health and negotiated a truce between their units for the day. And the story goes is that soon the British troops and the German troops got together and played a football or soccer match. Now, there's a lot of stories of whether or not soccer matches did or did not occur, and whether or not it was just Germans playing by themselves or British playing by themselves, or, you know, with each other. But it doesn't matter, because it's just cool that some of them did. But back to the great plum pudding policy. As Captain Stockwell and Baron von Sinner negotiated this truce, he wanted to offer more than just, you know, the cigars. And Captain Stockwell had recently been sent from home a care package that included some plum pudding. And so as they were negotiating this truce, and as he was talking, he told the soldiers to bring up the plum pudding, which they did. And then Baron von Sinner and Captain Stockwell shared the plum pudding together, and offered it to each other. Or he offered it to Baron von Sinner as a gift, and they shared it together and with their beers. And that's where the plum pudding policy comes from. Now, the reason the story is super cool is because fast forward 100 years. Now we're in, you know, 2014, and Captain Stockwell has a grandson whose name is Miles Stockwell, who is a retired major. And Baron von Sinner also has a grandson, who is a colonel, I'm going to say this weird, but Joachim Freiherr von Sinner, is also a retired German soldier. They got together 100 years later in 2014, went to that same spot that Christmas truce took place between their grandfathers, and kind of reenacted, I guess, the exchange that they had between the two of them.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
I did not know that part about that story. I really like that story, but that, I think is a really awesome ending.
Yeah. And so the mirror did kind of a coverage of this, and they were interviewing the two men. And Major Stockwell, the grandson, talks about how in England, the story of the Christmas truce is kind of a big deal. You know, it's perpetuated. But in Germany, it wasn't that big of a thing. And so when Colonel von Sinner, the grandson of Baron von Sinner, was reached out to by a historian, he had no idea what the story was. He hadn't a clue. And the historian caught him up, you know, told him these things, like, wow, that's really interesting. I didn't know any of that, and that's super cool. And the historian goes, hey, the grandson of Captain Stockwell, 100 years ago, is alive, and, you know, do you want to meet him? Do you want to talk to him? And they're like, oh, yeah, of course. And so they arranged this thing. And it's super cool and really interesting that they did that. And it's pretty fantastic. And so there's a really interesting poem. So one of the reasons why this event is so detailed and uniquely recorded is because Captain Stockwell recorded it in his war diary. There are no pictures of it because, you know, higher up brass and all the leadership thought it was a terrible idea and they were defying orders and all that other fun stuff. But he recorded it in his journal. In part of that journal, it is at least attributed to him a poem about the Christmas truce of 1914. And so let me just share that with you. Again, this is attributed to Captain Clifton English Stockwell. And he wrote, "'Twas a frosty Christmas morning in our trenches on the Lys, and a fog was hanging thick along the fields. You could hear the Boches singing, but no Christmas bells were ringing, except a tinkle of the bullets on shields. When the fog at last had lifted, and the Boche glances shifted, on our parapet in front of them they saw, on a notice board in writing, from the men that they were fighting, Merry Christmas, and Kaiser's heads galore. Then the Boche started shouting, will you come and take an outing? And a row of heads along our line appear, for two Saxons greatly daring, to our trenches were boldly faring, with a barrel of the most indifferent beer. Thus when, after dinner came, both sides did more of the same, and their trenches boldly left and came abroad, and with barrels full of beer and something of good cheer, made an effort to arrive at an accord. Then the officers conferred, while our rations were transferred, to a truce between the two they did agree, that till dawn the following day none should shoot or forward stray, whilst our notice board the enemy could see." That's cool. That's a fantastic and wonderful recounting of that particular event between those two units.
I really like that.
Yeah, it's fascinating and amazing that history like that 103 years ago, 106 years ago still exists. And it's awesome. I love it.
I just love how how easy it was for them to just put it down for the day, and how easily they recognized that everybody is a human, everybody wants to celebrate Christmas, you know, there's good in everybody, and it's more than just following orders, it's more than who's right and who's wrong and what side of history do you want to be on, but it's about like human kindness and all of that.
Mm-hmm. I think it would have made it really difficult in the following days. So there are some instances that the truce lasted more than just Christmas Day, but lasted through the New Year, through like Boxing Day. I don't remember what day Boxing Day exactly is, but or was on that day. But so in different areas, the informal truce lasted, you know, different lengths. But I can only imagine when that truce ended and they were back to fighting, you know, how difficult that would be. I'm sure some of the soldiers were thinking, oh, now I'm shooting at my friend, or now I'm shooting at this, you know, person who now has a name, who I drank with, who I ate with, who I shared pictures of my family with. And that would have been hard.
Yeah, that'd make it a lot harder.
Some historians and others kind of surmise that this whole experience is an interesting commentary on the difference between those on the front lines and those removed from the front lines, right? So it was, they claim, I don't know how real or not this was because I wasn't there, it was 100 years ago, right? But they claim that it was kind of a statement of the rank and file against the politicians or whomever else they viewed as responsible for the war, that the war was ridiculous, that it's not their war, it's not their fight, they're just being told to do so, and because they love their country and because they want to serve their families, it was just something that they were doing, but it wasn't something they necessarily supported. I don't know how true that is, but it is an interesting thought to mull around in your brain.
Yeah. Well, and two, one thing that I feel like was really big during World War One was the, and I guess it's still used today, but like a lot of visual propaganda and vilifying your enemies. And the way that some of these countries portrayed their enemies was pretty terrible. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at political cartoons from that time period and other things. But yeah, they saw through that. And what a great story that has now for me an even better ending with their two grandsons getting together.
So the end of the story of Captain Stockwell and Baron von Sinner is that the fighting erupted again the next day. Though there were reports from some sectors of hostilities remaining suspended into the new year, it does not seem to have been uncommon for the resumption of the war to be marked with further displays of mutual respect between enemies. In the trenches occupied by the Royal Welch Fusiliers, Captain Stockwell climbed upon the parapet, fired three shots in the air, and put up a flag with Merry Christmas on it. At this, his opposite number, Baron von Sinner, appeared on the German parapet, and both officers bowed and saluted. Baron von Sinner then also fired two shots in the air and went back into his trench. And then the war was on again. Kind of a depressing ending.
Well, I'll take it. Use that as a segue for mine. Mine starts out depressing, but ends happy.
Oh, good. I like it. We got this little wave thing going on.
Yeah, so I chose to share the story of the behind the song, I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day. It's not a song that is sung very frequently, but I think that if more people knew the meaning behind it, it has a really nice melody, and the meaning behind it, the story behind it, I think provides a lot of interesting and insightful, insight into why the song was written. And the song was written by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And just a little bit of background here. In March of 1863, Henry's son Charles left their house in Massachusetts and snuck out in the middle of the night and took a train down to Washington, D.C. to join the Union Army in the Civil War. He did so without his father's blessing, and his father had actually discouraged him from joining the Union Army, but he felt it was his duty to serve his country. And Charles was the oldest of six children for Henry Wadsworth Longfellow and his wife, Fanny. She actually, 2 years earlier in 1861, had passed away tragically. Her dress caught on fire. I'm not exactly sure how, but...
What?
Yeah. Yeah. Longfellow was sleeping in another room, and he woke to his wife's screams and tried to extinguish the flames with a rug and then his own body. But her body had been burned so badly that she died the next day.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
And he, using himself to try and beat out the flames, was so severely burned that he couldn't attend her funeral, which would be...
Guy has a tragic life.
That would be really hard.
Makes for a good poet, I guess.
Yeah, well, and that's why, you know, he started growing his beard that's so kind of signature for his look, is his face was so badly burned that he didn't want to shave every day or at all for a really long time. And he took that, the loss of his wife, really hard, which is completely understandable. But he wrote that he often feared that he would be sent to an asylum on account of his grief. If that just illustrates how hard it was for him to lose her.
It does.
Yeah. Anyway, so his son then 2 years later runs off to join the Union Army, not having his father's permission. A captain wrote a letter to Henry Wadsworth Longfellow asking permission for his son to enlist, and Longfellow granted permission for that. But then Longfellow wrote letters to some friends of his, a senator and the governor of Massachusetts, and wanted to push for his son to become an officer. But his son had already done that with his skills and was commissioned as a second lieutenant. And he didn't see a lot of action that first year. And then that summer he got sick with typhoid and went home to recover for a couple months. On the first day of December, Longfellow was dining at home when he got a telegram that his son had been severely wounded. The telegram said that he had been shot in the face, when in reality he had been shot in the shoulder, but it was severe enough that I guess whoever wrote the telegram mistook it as a shot to the face.
Anatomy was different back then.
Yeah. So that was during, that was November 27th, 1863, is when he was injured during a battle of the Mine Run campaign. And actually, to just your comment on anatomy, the bullet that hit him, it went through his left shoulder and exited under the right shoulder blade. So it went all the way across his back, nicked his spine, but he avoided being paralyzed by less than an inch.
Oof.
Which is incredible. That's a very lucky that he was able to avoid that. So they were worried, and they didn't know at the time that he was injured that he might not be paralyzed, but they gave him at least 6 months to heal. So on Christmas Day, Longfellow was at home. He's 57 years old. He's widowed. His oldest son is nearly paralyzed. And he's reflecting on the war that his country is fighting against itself. And he heard the bells from a nearby church in Cambridge, Massachusetts, singing what he calls Peace on Earth. He looks around and this kind of retrospective and doesn't feel that there is peace on earth. He listens to the bells and feels that this lack of hope, this dark time, and again, the Civil War was another war that had some pretty grisly injuries. The infantry and the way they were fighting with big musket balls and cannons and a lot of amputations and things like that from the Civil War. And it just didn't give Longfellow a lot of hope. But as he pondered that, it came to him that there is hope, that there is a reason for celebrating Christmas. And I'll just read the words. He actually wrote it as it was intended to be a poem. But he said, these are the original words of the poem right here. I heard the bells on Christmas Day, their old familiar carols play, and wild and sweet the words repeat of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And thought how, as the day had come, the belfries of all Christendom had rolled along the unbroken song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Till ringing, singing on its way, the world revolved from night to day, a voice, a chime, a chant sublime of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Then from each black, accursed mouth, the cannon thundered in the south, and with the sound, the carols drowned of peace on earth, goodwill to men. It was as if an earthquake rent the hearthstones of a continent and made forlorn the households born of peace on earth, goodwill to men. And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. Then pealed the bells more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. The wrong shall fail, the right prevail, with peace on earth, goodwill to men. And as we approach Christmas of 2020, heading into the end of what has been a crazy year for us globally, nationally, and for me personally, this felt like a very fitting tribute to us as humanity, to the craziness that we've seen and endured. And I believe strongly that in the midst of all of the chaos that we've seen, that we can hear the words of Longfellow, that God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. and the right will prevail. We're going to make it through this. I hope that, it's our hope at Just Some Dads, that you're able to spend this Christmas with those that you love the most, whether that's your immediate family or extended family, with friends, or if you are spending it by yourself, that you're able to have the best holiday possible, that you can feel the peace of Christmas, that in the words of Charles Dickens, God bless us, everyone.
We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Forward to more episodes with you and more dad awesomeness. And we hope you enjoy this little, I don't know, a little bit of Christmas history, I guess, Ghosts of Christmas Past. It was a lot of fun for us looking up these stories and learning a little bit more about the history and about some of these incredible men and incredible people who have found ways to find light in the darkest of places.
Yeah. And if you're really in the mood for a good Christmas uplift, there are tons of inspirational Christmas stories out there. Some that are very familiar that we haven't touched on. I found one from a newspaper in the Midwest of a secret Santa who for the last couple of years has been walking around grocery stores and malls and giving people $100 bills in just because he's able to do that and wants to bring peace to somebody.
Wait, so what town is that? Can I go there?
I, off the top of my head, I don't remember. I'm sure you could find it. Yeah, but there's, I don't know. In doing our research and preparation for this episode and in talking about it, I know that at times this year I have been filled with despair and not seen a lot of goodness and hope and positivity, but it's out there, and we look forward to sharing that with you in the coming year. We're very grateful for what we have seen, what we've done so far here with our podcast, and for all the support that we've got from all of you, and we can't wait to see what next year brings for us. As Michael said, we wish you a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, a happy time for you and your loved ones. Until next year,
keep doing good.